In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
So I am so thrilled today that I have Karen Curry Parker with me, number one best-selling author, human design specialist, trainer, professional speaker, and creator of Quantum Human Design and the Quantum Alignment System. She's been a high-performance coach, business coach for more than 30 years, and coached over more than 10,000 people. And I'm so excited to have the chance to just get to know you better. And this time on our interview, I'm just thrilled. So welcome, Karen, to The Spark.
I'm so excited to be here.
Well, so what I like to do when I first have guests on the show is, you know, people see you and they see all, you know, all the best-selling books and, you know, the life coaching and these amazing things that you're doing. Help us get to know a little bit just about you and what your personal journey was. Like, I'm so curious how you got into human design, but also, I mean, did you go to, like, what was your journey before this?
Well, I would say it's a journey that's before and during and maybe kind of, you know, enduring. That is such a huge question. So I'll have to think about, like, where to start so that we're not here for the next 12 years. You know, I think I started my journey probably when I was 4 years old. And I don't mean to be strange about that, but I had an imaginary friend who, as it turns out later on, became my spirit guide. So, but at that time, my mom was like, "You have an imaginary friend named Thomas." And I was riding in the back seat of my mom's car, and you know, this was the 1960s, so, you know, windows up, my mom smoking, and is buckled into the seatbelt next to me. And he turns to me and he says, "Your job here is to go forth and teach only love." And I don't know why, of all the things that he said to me in my whole life, that was a phrase that just stuck. And it's a phrase that stuck throughout my whole childhood, which made me kind of a weird kid. And I had a weird childhood. My dad actually worked for the State Department. He actually was a spy, no kidding. And so we grew up overseas. I grew up in the strangest places in the Middle East. You know, I grew up in, it's a long story. That's a whole different interview.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, my parents took me to every sacred site that we were, you know, I went to Baalbek, I went to Delphi, we went to Palmyra, we went to all the places, all the sacred sites in England growing up. So I had a very strange childhood on top of being connected to this imaginary person and having this mission. And so, you know, I grew up and tried to be normal, and I had a job for 6 months. And turned out that I was really pretty much unemployable. I worked as a nurse for a short time. I worked as a midwife for a little bit of a longer time. And when I was 25, which is a really long time ago now, I stumbled upon a man named Thomas Leonard, who is considered to be the father of life coaching. I was one of the very first, I was just drawn to the idea of life coaching. It was perfect for me. It was like, here's a way I can help people without having to be in a box, right? I didn't have to have a title. I didn't have to have a certification. Didn't have to have a license. Things have changed a little bit since then, but at that time we were kind of rogue. And I trained to be a life coach. And very shortly after that, I had five children. My youngest son had a very extreme reaction to. Boy, this is going to be really long. I'm trying
No,
to
this
talk
is great. No, this is great. We've got time. We're going to
I'm
get it
really
all.
old, so it's a long story. So my youngest kid, my youngest son, had a very extreme reaction to a DPT vaccine and stopped speaking. And he didn't speak for 4 years. And we searched, my husband at the time, and I searched and searched and searched for answers to try to figure out how to help our kid. And one night on the internet, my husband at the time found EFT, the emotional freedom techniques. And this was just when it came out. And so we started using EFT with our son for about 2 weeks. And within 2 weeks, he was speaking in full sentences. So then I was like, well, we have to go study this now. So I was a life coach. I started doing EFT. I went to the very first EFT training in the world. So I started tapping with people and coaching with people. And then my husband went on a spiritual retreat to Sedona, Arizona. And at the time when he went to this retreat, we were living in Houston. I was homeschooling my kids. It was a pretty suburban life, except I was a life coach, but nobody knew what that was at the time. And he came back with this really strange chart. And I looked at that chart, and you know how you have those experiences where you're just like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, you get chills and you cry because it's like destiny is just sort of here you are, here you go. Yeah. So I said, I have to learn everything about this. So we decided, okay, we're going to move to Sedona and we'll learn about human design. So we put the house on the market, sold the house in 2 weeks, packed up all the kids, hit the road, drove across from Texas to Arizona, got to Sedona. And when I got to Sedona, my youngest son had an ear infection. And so I went to the pediatrician's office, kid on my hip, came out of the pediatrician's office, and across the hallway was a door with that strange symbol on it, the human design chart. And I thought, well, I'm going to go in there and see what this is. So I walk in the door, and the woman behind the desk says, oh, did you come for the job? And I said, yeah. So she hired me there on the spot. I got to work for Human Design America for a few years. I got to study and train with the founder of the system. And that's kind of how my whole journey of sort of synthesizing human design, marrying it with coaching, adding a little bit of energy therapy, energy psychology to it. And, you know, here I am 22 years later. And so that's the short version.
Yeah. Well, and my gosh, thank you so much for sharing that, because what an awesome journey. And it's like, I can see as you're talking, I can just get this vision of how the universe just kept lining up to support you, and serendipity just kept coming through. You were at the right place, the right time, or you were following your internal guidance system.
Totally.
That was taking you to the next place.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I think I feel, for whatever reason, you know, I've been lucky enough to, maybe my internal guidance system sort of gets broadcast in a megaphone. I have never had to fight to connect to that. But I also just really want to say, because I think sometimes when we talk about personal growth and development, or people who teach, or people who have knowledge, we have a tendency to think, oh, I just followed my guidance and poof, voila, my life is magic. You know, along the way, you know, my first husband had some really deep mental health challenges that ended up really with our marriage coming apart. I ended up with 5 kids full time by myself. You know, I've certainly in that journey, you know, I've lost a house to foreclosure. I've been bankrupt. I've struggled with money. It was a fight many, many years along that journey. So it wasn't like, oh, I just followed my guidance and poof, everything was magic. It was a fight. And part of the struggle for the fight for me was that I couldn't just say, hey, I need to just time out on this spiritual quest. I need to just go get a job and feed my kids. That probably would have been the more responsible thing to do, quite frankly, under the circumstances that I was facing. But literally, like, something in me just would never let me do that. And so I had to really fight to be in this role and play this role for a lot of years. And it wasn't always just like, follow your guidance, poof, it's magic. You know, there were a lot of bad dates along the way, bad finances along the way. I had breast cancer when I was 40. There's all kinds of twists and turns in the plot line since then. And I really, you know, I always want to emphasize that, because I think sometimes we teach, the way we present information or the way people talk about it is kind of like, yeah, I just had this enlightened journey and poof, three, you know, here I am, magic. And it's not. It's always a process of exploration and expansion. And sometimes that expansion means you have to take everything apart and rebuild it differently or redefine it or craft a new narrative. And none of that's wrong and none of that's screwing up and none of that's making a mistake. It's just the journey.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just resonate with that so much and appreciate you sharing that, because I do think that's one of the essential messages mm-hmm. that we can share with the audience, you know, that we can share with one another, that for none of us, there's none of us, you know, that come out of life, I say unscathed, you know, that we have our bumps and our challenges and the difficulties mm-hmm. and you know, I resonate with you on the single mother thing, although I only had one for 5 years instead of five for all those years. but I know, you know, I put myself through graduate school during that time and lived on $50 a week after my bills were paid. So, you know, I really resonate with you on that, and that it's not just fairy dust is sprinkled and we get the hit and, you know, life is absolutely magical. And it is magical.
Yes. It
right.
is.
So it's such an interesting duality of our experience. And that I think once we all realize that, I love Jacob Lieberman's expression that we're all the same height.
Yes.
So when we realize that, it's like, yes, we're all here to help guide one another on this journey that we call life. And that when we get that no one is up here, that we actually, I love the expression, we're our own guru. Yes. That we don't always have to look to someone else to be the guru, how we start learning to listen to that own, you know, our own internal guidance system. Mm-hmm. And that we are, doggone it, I wish it wasn't true, but we are going to have struggles and challenges. And that's part of this ride.
Totally, totally. And I think, you know, I just want to add one other piece to it, because there are blessings and curses, if you will, to the new thought movement, right? And I think, you know, I'm old enough, and maybe you are too, you know, to remember the movie The Secret, which, you know, has really, really important and vital information in it. And there's nothing in it where I would say, oh, that's not true. There's truth in it. And I think there's also not enough information in it, because I think there's been this kind of mythology, if you will, in the personal growth and development industry, or the spiritual growth industry, that says, oh, your thoughts create your reality. So if you're having a crappy reality, that's because you're having bad thoughts. And I think that's such an unfair simplification sometimes, because sometimes stuff is going to happen. You're going to have stuff that you're not going to control. You know, my best friend's 16-year-old son died of leukemia. And there wasn't any bad thought that they were having that created that experience. We don't know sometimes in the mystery of the unfolding of our life what it entails, what our lessons are on a soul level. And it's again, I don't want to be like, it's all hard. You're going to, it's not.
Magical.
It's magical. And it's going to be what it is. And you're going to, you know, your gifts and what you bring to the world in your journey is going to be completely and totally unique. And ultimately, the way you live this journey that is your life, if you will, adds to the story, the memory bank, the data bank of the human condition. And the more we can face all of life, the ups, the downs, the joys, the challenges, the more we face it with resiliency and the intention and the work to continue to return to source, the more we expand the edges of this memory bank in the human story. And the more I think, especially right now at this transition point on the planet, the more we are giving back to the story of the world, new ways in which we can encounter challenge and new ways in which we can align authentically with who we are in the face of challenge and expand possibilities, not only for ourselves, but ultimately for everyone in the world, because we're all drawing from that same data bank. And that's, I think, really why it's so essential, especially at this point on the planet, to really find your unique place of connection. You call it the spark, you know, find that place where you're deeply connected to life's intelligence unfolding through you, and you learn how to follow that with joy, and joy meaning you're not going to wake up every day completely blissed out, but you're going to have a steady stream of adaptability and resiliency that's going to keep you in the flow of the game, if you will.
Yes, beautiful. And, I absolutely, again, resonate with what you're saying. And I think, again, such an essential message for people. And that sometimes the flow leads us to life situations that aren't always wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it also leads us to situations that, sorry, my dog is having a time. I know they can edit this out. It's okay, Jules. and just the importance of, I think, showing up every day and aligning mm-hmm. with whether we call it, the inner spark or our most divine expression of self or life. What happens through that, I think, is exactly what you're saying. We get this sense of resiliency. Mm-hmm. And so maybe what we find is instead of life is always simple or easy, which is some old narrative, mm-hmm. That it's supposed to be. And if it's not, what's wrong with me? Instead, it's that what I learn how to do as I become more balanced and more connected with whether we call it source, the divine, all of life, the universe, our internal guidance system. What I've noticed in my own life and those of my clients and the people that I know is that what happens is we start responding mm-hmm. to life instead of reacting.
Right, right.
So it takes us out of those kind of fight or flight states mm-hmm. and we're able to actually then, it's like we're navigating through the rapids in a more beautiful way so that we're not smashing up against the rocks.
Right, totally. Well, and I think it allows us to, if we can learn to be, I like to call it less reactive and more deliberate or conscious, then we're also creating from a different place, not only spiritually, but even from a different place in the body. It's like fight or flight really limits our creative response. It limits us to basically dialing into old patterns. And if we want to transcend those patterns and break free from those patterns, then we have to stay in a state of faith. And stay and faith is a hard thing to talk about sometimes because it's like, well, what is it? And how do you access it? And really it's an emotional state. And it's emotional state that says, I am expecting the best outcome out of this. This might be a difficult journey. I don't know how it's gonna end up, but I know it's gonna end up okay in the end. And that emotional frequency actually calibrates us into a state of coherence. It calibrates the heart. It gets the body in sync with that expectation. And when we do that, not only do we, of course, I think, be able to access divine mind and miracles, which are really just basically things that break patterns. It also turns on, the dopamine and the serotonin. And now all of a sudden we can access a different creative state with our minds, our physical minds, our brains. So, learning to, training ourselves to, get out of that fear-based place and going, okay, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I know it's going to be okay. And really learning to stay in that. I always think of it, it's like if you play a flute, and I don't play the flute, so I have no idea what I'm talking about really, but I look at people playing the flute and it looks like they're holding a note with their breath doing circular breathing. It's like that faith is like being able to hold that note even when, the rock is coming at you to be like, okay, I don't know how this is going to end up, but it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And I want to start moving towards, you sharing more about the quantum human mm-hmm. and, it's so interesting to me because right before I met you for the first time mm-hmm. and you had me on your show, a girlfriend of mine had said, oh my gosh, you have got to get into this human design. Like it is the most incredible thing. And she's really using it mm-hmm. as a guidepost for her life right now. Mm-hmm. And so I had just started hearing about it and I took the assessment and I'm a projector. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. How does this human design serve us? And if you can explain a little bit about for people that don't yet know, mm-hmm. what is it?
Okay. So I'm going to break it down first and start with the, what is it and then how to use it. Cause I think that's probably a better way to explain it. Cause it is a system that sometimes can be perceived as being complex, but I think it's actually really simple. So human design is technically a synthesis of Eastern and Western astrology, the Chinese I Ching, the Hindu chakra system, Judaic Kabbalah, and quantum physics all rolled up into one. So it is a collection. I like to think of it as a collection of modern and ancient cross-cultural archetypes. And so, you know, when we look at what is an archetype, it's basically elements of the human story, and they're kind of cataloged, or it's like a Rolodex, if you will, of all the little shifts and nuances that are part of the human story, which I love thinking about it that way, because, you know, we oftentimes say, well, you got to live authentic, you got to be authentic, and it's like, that's a great idea, but how the heck in the entire story of what it means to be a human being, how do you tease out what is authentically yours? You've been basically conditioned in this bath of energy and this conditioning field and the consciousness and the belief systems of your family, the planet, everything. How do you, in the midst of all that, figure out, well, what is me, right? So this system really gives you a very systematic approach, if you will, to going, oh, I'm this and I'm that, and this is how I'm more likely to experience this in the context of the story of my life. So it's a great tool for figuring out, well, who am I? If I'm the one creating my reality, then who is the me that's doing it? So that's kind of the what is it? You use it very similar to astrology. You run an assessment with your birthday, your birth time, your birthplace, and that spits out a very strange looking chart. Let me see if I have one here. If you've never seen this chart before, it looks kind of like this. So it's all kinds of shapes and lines and things. Basically what it is, it's a map of how you use energy. It's a map that shows you, really based on how it's colored in, what is your soul curriculum? What is your interface? How do you interface with life's intelligence or quantum field or divine mind or God or whatever word you want to put in there, which is really, I think, the elegant, simple answer. It shows you how you interface with source. It shows you how you respond to, using your word there, to the world around you, so that you're making choices that are in alignment with your authentic identity, so that you can begin to craft a sequence of choices that make your life begin to reflect the true story of who you are. I mean, if you think about our life, we are in, you know, basically the sum total of every decision we've ever made. And if you can make a decision from that connected, authentic place, then the decisions you make start to reflect in your outer world that authentic life that I think everybody is wanting, is longing for. It's that thing that if we don't have, it makes us feel a little bit restless or go on a quest, if you will. So in the system, there are, at the heart of it, there's a lot of complexity. I mean, I could sit here and I could look at your chart, and you and I could probably talk for about 24 hours, because, you know, I've been doing this for 22 years, and I'm not going to lie, I'm deeply in love with this system. So I have a lot of things to say about all the little parts, but really at the heart of it, in the name of keeping it simple, is that this system says there are 5 different energy types. Each one of these energy types has a different way of making decisions. And the way you make decisions brings you into harmony with the best use of your energy, the best use of, or the maximum, it helps you unfold the maximum potential of your soul curriculum. It teaches you what you're here to learn. And ultimately, through that process of really learning, it gives you it gives you an ability to then share your gifts and your light with the world. So.
Just amazing. And I have not been able to decipher my chart yet. So I probably need to set up a session with you.
We should do that for sure.
I would love to do that with you. And so, you know, and so the question that I think it's interesting, because I know as I was taking it, I'm like, I want to be a manifester. I'm like, that. And that's funny, because my boyfriend had said the same thing. You know, he's like, I want to be a manifester, but both of us are projectors.
I love that. So everybody wants to be a type. One of the types is called the manifester. And I hate the name of the types. I've renamed all the types because I'm like, who doesn't manifest? If you're not manifesting, you're dead. So we're all manifestors. So let's get over that. I want to be a manifester thing. Okay. We're all creating and we're all creative. And I would say, you know, when you understand your type, And you start living in alignment with how you make decisions best, your connection to your place, your unique, vital, and irreplaceable role in the cosmic plan. When you're making those choices, you don't care whether you're a manifester or not, because you're going to be you. And that's going to feel amazing. And that's going to bring to you whatever it is we think that if we're manifestors, we're going to get access to. You'll get access to the same darn things, except you'll do it your way. And that's going to feel like, oh, I'm not going to burn out. I'm not going to try to be something I'm not. I get to do it my way. I get to do it in a way where I'm acknowledged for who I am and people see my gifts. And it's a whole better story than you trying to be a manifester, or anybody trying to be a manifester. Unless you're a manifester, then you should be a manifester. So.
Right. And thank you for that. I mean, giving people permission to be exactly what they are. And there's not, again, this hierarchy in the human design, one that's better than the other. It's really what I'm hearing is living in alignment.
Right, right. Exactly. And I think, you know, because so much of what the chart tells you is actually how to stay connected to your vital life force so that you're not burning out and you're not losing your connection to your value. You know, I did a TED Talk last year about I've redefined trauma in my TED Talk, because I think we don't talk enough about, maybe call it micro trauma. And I don't want to in any way like say if you've experienced real trauma in your life, like an assault or yeah, abuse, that's not traumatic. It's absolutely traumatic. But I think that we discount sometimes the trauma of being raised in a world that tells you, hey, you have to be this way and you're not that way. And so all of a sudden now how you are becomes devalued. And when we raise people, or our world tells us you have to be this way or you're not going to be successful, precious, loved, whatever, then the trauma then becomes, oh, not only have I lost a connection with my value, I also have lost a connection with my right place in the world. And when we lose that, the body experiences that, the soul and the spirit experiences that just as traumatically sometimes as being violently assaulted. And we get into these patterns then of having sort of this low-grade constant PTSD because somewhere along the way we learned that it's not okay to be who we are and how we are. And I think to me the beauty of human design is it gives us a really systematic path to reclaiming not only your sense of value and that preciousness that is you as the once-in-a-lifetime cosmic event that you are, but also it gives us a path to get back onto, you know, a way to collect, to align and to walk along a journey that leads us to our right place in the world where we feel good and we are serving at our highest level and we are giving our gifts to the world.
Well, and talk about gifts. What a gift it sounds like this is to be able to have this kind of clarity and to be able to live in this alignment. And so I'm wondering for you, how has human design served you in your life?
So, you know, that I am what's called a manifesting generator in traditional human design. In quantum human design, we call that a time bender. You, by the way, as a projector, you are what I call an orchestrator. You're here to orchestrate everything. For me personally, I am a professional spaghetti thrower, meaning, I mean, I can spin out and throw ideas and possibilities and potentials in multiple directions simultaneously. And without knowing my human design, it basically meant prior to really understanding how I operate, I threw a lot of spaghetti with no results and really felt, honestly felt kind of invisible and frankly kind of stupid. Like, what is wrong with me? I'm putting all this effort into creating all this stuff and nothing is working. And feeling, you know, very, very frustrated and even a little bit angry at, you know, my life. And knowing how to interpret the signals that life's intelligence was dropping kind of pretty loudly in front of me and being able to go, oh, I see, this is where my path is leading me. This is the next right step, and not getting, you know, lost up here in, oh, I got to figure this out. it just took an enormous amount of pressure off of me, honestly, in my creative process. And it really has led me to, it's such an answer to the question I've been really rethinking a lot lately, because as I said, it's not like every time I make a decision, it's perfect, because it's not, but it's always been the decision that's brought me to where I needed to be for the next step in my growth. And I will say that it has brought a certain peace. And most importantly, I think this is probably the big piece here. It makes me present to the world because I know how to interpret the world differently. So I'm aware and I'm here and I'm in the moment and I'm available to being a greater force of light, if you will, and a greater force of love, not only to my clients and through my business, but in everyone that I impact and everyone who is, you know, near and dear in my personal circle. And even when I go to the grocery store, it's just, it's a different energy because I'm playing awake in the field, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, and that, I think about conversations I used to have with my dad. This is like 20 years ago, and we'd be talking about philosophy and life. And yeah, I remember him saying, you know, that's what we're always trying to do, is to wake up to our life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so how beautiful to be fully present. And it's almost like fully charged, fully embodied in that energy that's aligned. And so that not only is that a gift for you in your life, but you're bringing it to everyone around you that you encounter.
Well, and I think that's what we all bring, because presence is, if we look at it again, going into the physics of it a little bit, you know, presence is an energetic frequency. When you are here and you're here and you're present, you know, you're aligned with the natural order of life's intelligence, which is a high frequency state. You know, I think we get really complicated about high frequency. Like we feel like we have to ohm and drink green smoothies and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, maybe it's just about being here and eating chocolate and having wine and it's okay. And so, you know, when you're here and you're really occupying the manifestation of divine mind as that is the story of your life, you know, and you're present to this energy, you walk down your street, you don't even have to talk to your neighbors, but you're bringing this wave of energy with you. And this wave of energy, this energy that is, hey, it's okay to be who I am, it's okay for me to be here, that, you know, and that's that thing that I think everybody's longing for. When we're embodying that energy, because higher frequencies entrain lower frequencies, we're creating a force field, if you will, that I think, again, at this time on the planet, is the most important force field to occupy. Because when we're creating this wave of energy, we're bringing everybody along with us, and we're all going, hey, it's okay to be me. And when we're creating from this place of it's okay to be me, now all of a sudden, I am enough. And when I am embodying the field that says I am enough, all of a sudden, I have enough. And all of a sudden, when I have enough, now I'm like going, okay, if I have enough, I'm suddenly not in competition with anybody else. I don't have to be better than or have more than. My sense of value is completely different. So now I'm creating from a, okay, I am enough. Wow, I'm actually more than enough now that I know that I'm enough. I have more to give, more to share. I have more to expand. And I'm hanging out with people who are getting that too. And that expansion goes global. That expansion gives us the force field, if you will, to then do the energetic work that's necessary to create a world of sustainable, equitable, just peace. Because we can't create that if we're all going, I'm not enough. What if I give away this? If I do this with this person, I'm not going to have this over here. If we're still engaging in that, moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic equation, that's a zero-sum game, we can't create what we're all, well, I think all of us know in our hearts is possible. So even though it's like, okay, I'm going to follow my design, I'm going to have this authentic life, yay me. It's not really just about you. It's about you being you so that the rest of the world can also be themselves and also tap into this enoughness. Because when we can create from that place, the whole face of the planet is going to change dramatically. And I think quite beautifully. And I think honestly, we're right on the cusp of getting there. We're so close.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, when I listen to you, I mean, I'm getting almost tears in my eyes, because this is the hope. And this is, to me, this is the truth of what is possible and is we're we are moving towards, like you said, I mean, we're right there. We're right on the cusp. And so that's, you know, as you and I had talked about before the interview, you know, that's one of the big messages in my film, you know, when Sparks Ignite is the essential piece of doing your own work for each of us.
Yes.
To really take that healing journey and to step into something like human design so we can be fully aligned with this, so that we're actually contributing an even deeper, better way from that place of authenticity and a place where we're giving from a well, where we do have that abundance.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that is, wow, that is just the beauty of this. And I'm just so blown away, and you articulated it so beautifully. And so I get very excited and very inspired that this really is potential reality.
Totally. And I think I love that you're excited, because I think that we have to get excited about this, because that's also part of it, because that goes back to how do we go from being fear-based to being deliberate? You know, this is that faith piece, that excitement, that's our faith piece. Maybe we're not seeing it yet. And I'm going to say something, and this is, I've never said this before, so I'm like hoping it doesn't land wrong, but I definitely want to be mindful of not coming from a hyper privileged place, because I'm definitely coming from a very privileged place. And in my reality that I live in, I really experience a lot of peace and alignment and abundance. And I feel like the more I'm having this experience and noticing it, the more this experience is expanding, obviously not just in my personal life, but it's expanding beyond my sphere of influence. And, you know, I want to encourage all of us, especially in this phase of our energy expansion, if you will, to really make sure we are taking stock of our personal reality and acknowledging it and experiencing the gratitude for it, so that we can focus on that expansion, because that gratitude is part of that expansion process, so that everyone can be living in this quality of life that many of us are already experiencing. You know, it is my fervent dream that I wake up tomorrow. Tomorrow would be nice on the schedule.
Yeah.
And everybody's got this. And we can go on and do the things we need to do, like rewrite legislation so we eliminate institutionalized racism and make sure that the economy is structured in a way that's equitable and fair and takes care of the people who need extra support, and that we have the resources available to raise children in environments where they are always safe and well-fed, and where they are nurtured and you know, loved, so that they can become who they are without the trauma and the rewriting the trauma patterns. You know, the more we get this for ourselves, it's not selfish. I think that's the piece I'm really trying to say. It's not selfish. It's an essential component to expanding the field.
Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, I think exactly that. That's one of the, I feel like my personal messages, I also, you know, feel like I'm speaking a lot, is it's okay to allow yourself to be priority in your own life.
Mm-hmm. And it's literally the most selfless thing you can do.
Yeah, the most selfless thing you can do. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the change of the world depends on it.
Yes. Yeah. Because if we're creating from the martyrdom model, and I think a lot of us in the light worker community, if you call it that, we're still really indoctrinated with that. You have to give up to be a healer. You have to give up to serve. And if we're creating from that martyrdom piece, you know, think about the metaphor of martyrdom. The end result's not so pretty. And that's not going to be contributing anything except, you know, fear and maybe a little bitterness. So let's start creating from a different place where there's expansion and not contraction, and there's giving and there's also sustaining, and embodying that sustainment and that enoughness, because then we can create sustainably and enough. So
yeah. And so that point of power is in the present moment, that we can start rewriting the old narrative and rewriting what's possible now and moving forward.
Totally.
Well, let's switch gears just for one more moment. Mm-hmm. This has just all been so amazing and inspirational. I guess I'm curious for you. I know that I got one of your wonderful books and that you had sent me. And what is that your latest book?
I forgot which one I sent you. Which one was it?
The one with the solar plexus.
Yes, this one. This is the latest one. Yeah. That one. Is that the one you got? Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, tell us about that book a little bit. And then also moving forward, what's on the horizon for Karen?
Oh my God. Okay. So in the story of human design, if you will, there is information about the shift. So many of us have been saying, we're in the shift. There's a, you know, and what human design does is it actually lays out what I'll call the mechanics of the shift. Because what's happening is as our consciousness evolves, our energy field changes because we have to hold different frequencies of energies and we have different points of creativity as we expand. So we had a big shift in the late 1700s where ego emerged as a thing. And the emergence of ego was actually a really essential component to having personal sovereignty over your own life, which is a big deal. I mean, if you think about 400 years ago, you couldn't wake up one morning as a servant and go, hey, I'm going to be king. I'm going to visualize this. I'm going to hold a vibe for king. You know, that wasn't in our journey, right? And so now we can really, you know, because we have this new, you know, evolved consciousness, we have more sovereignty over our life path. Many of us do. Many of us are still, you know, learning, and many of us are still needing support, you know, in very concrete ways to access that. As we shift at this time on the planet, what we're really doing, because again, as a result of changes in consciousness, is we're learning to create not out of a motivation that's driven by fear and zero sum games, but we're learning to create expansively through the power of faith and learning how to harness emotional frequencies of energies as key components to expanding our capacity to build enoughness on the planet, to build sustainably, to build peacefully, to build abundantly. And the chart, there's a change in the chart that's actually slated to happen in 2027. And that change in the chart really shows us the pathway, if you will, to how we begin to create in what I'll call the quantum era, meaning we are becoming more and more adept. I mean, we're already in it, so it's not like it's gonna be brand new. You're gonna wake up one day in February in 2027 and go, wow, I can do this now. You're already learning it. And what we're learning is that our thoughts, conditioned or not, create an emotional frequency. That emotional frequency entrains the heart. When we know how to work with the power of the mind and to use the power of our imagination, not the power of figuring things out, which doesn't work. When we use the power of our imagination, we can stimulate specific emotional frequencies. Those frequencies calibrate the heart and influence what we attract into our experience and really sets the stage for us to break free from old patterns and old conditioning and really step into creating something brand new in the world. So this book outlines sort of the whole history of the shifts in consciousness and how that's played out in the human condition over the last 200 years, and kind of gives you a code, if you will, for how to really entrain yourself and your own consciousness to really be able to step into this era of quantum creativity, if you will.
And the part to me that is so, again, exciting and phenomenal is the piece where we can break the code of mm-hmm. our ancestors.
Yes. Yes.
Totally. That we no longer have to just say, well, this was, you know, the programming from my great, great grandmother. I'm still carrying the wounds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and it's not that hard. I mean, this is the other thing is it really, and this is, I think, the exciting part about where we are with science is that we're learning now that something as simple as ritual, you know, can, you know, ritual is a patterned condition. And the patterns of ritual can actually rewire the patterns in the hippocampus. And so we start perceiving the world differently because of ritual. So ritual is powerful. Certainly energy psychology and any of those kinds of tools that are out there, including like EMDR, EFT, these things are really powerful. But on a very, very simple level, we can literally change our epigenetic code just with language. Which is actually why I rewrote all the language in the human design system, because when I went and sort of measured this in the lab, the words carry frequencies of energy. And I deliberately shifted up all the words we were using because to me, human design is a storytelling tool. It's a tool that helps you really consciously and deliberately write your own narrative, because our narrative is really what sets the tone and the direction for our life. And when you have a pool of vocabulary words that you're choosing from that are high quality, high frequency language, you know, words that we know can, if we're using them consistently and we're moving into a story that we're telling about ourselves that embody these frequencies, we know these energies can literally shift epigenetic programming, upregulate our DNA expression, and change our experience of the world and change our physical experience of the world. So, you know, the power of what are the codes, if you will, that I wrote about in this book are the codes that help us rethink some of our old programming and give us new language to begin to literally write a new story about who you are, why you're here, what you're here to do, and how amazing you are.
Yeah, beautiful. I love this. And so the secondary piece is what's ahead? What's on the horizon?
Okay. That's always a hard question because like I said, I'm a big spaghetti thrower. So what's ahead? So, you know, I do believe because I think we're on the edge of a creative revolution. You know, one of the things that I've done recently is, I have a publishing company that I've created because I think that it's time for us to expeditiously and with high integrity really promote people who are here to change the story of humanity, get their word out in many, many different ways. So I'm publishing. I'm always writing. I write about a book a year. So I have actually three books I'm working on right now. Different. I have different degrees of excitement about them depending on what day it is. and you know, honestly, I'm on a very personal level. I'm really looking forward to someday very soon doing live and in person events. That's a very personal thing. But oh my gosh, I miss people.
Yes. You know? Yes, I'm so with you.
Yeah.
Being able to do this last weekend, as you know, I did that. Presentation in Sedona. And because it was outdoors, we were able to have it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, it was so amazing. Even though I'm so thankful that we have this medium. And so we can share these kind of things on YouTube and be able to share interviews like this. There is nothing like being in real life.
Hugging.
Oh my gosh. That's the best. So yeah. So I am so thankful that you're a spaghetti thrower. I'm glad you never gave that up. And I just feel like, I just want to say, I feel like you're throwing some amazing spaghetti.
Thank you.
And I'm so thankful for that. As we start to wrap up, Karen, what would you like to leave the audience with? What would be your essential message?
I this is a metaphor I use a lot, but I'm just going to use it again because it just is so apropos. As you and I shared at the beginning of our call, you know, I have two dogs, two cats. That's already chaos enough. I have an 11-year-old still living at home. I have, you know, five of my own children. My husband has three children. So we have eight kids. They're all grown up. I have grandkids. You know, puzzles in our house have a very short lifespan. And, you know, I had one kid in particular, like he's grown up and he's in the army now, but, you know, he used to like rip pieces off the puzzle and jam it into the wrong place because he didn't have any patience for the puzzle. And, you know, if you look at a puzzle, the puzzle is only as beautiful as the sum total of the pieces. If there's a piece missing, or if somebody's ripped off nubbins on the ends of a piece and jammed it into the wrong place, it makes the whole puzzle look wonky. Or if a cat eats a piece. And, you know, we're like that puzzle. Humanity is like that puzzle. We are a cosmic divine puzzle. And if you are not in your right place, or you've torn pieces of yourself off to try to jam yourself into a place where you don't fit, you might think, oh, it doesn't matter. It matters. Your presence on this planet makes the planet what it is, and it makes the puzzle as beautiful as it is. And I think for us right now at this crucial time on the planet, the most important thing you can do is to just fully occupy that piece that is yours to fill, and to fill it up with every ounce of your being, and to really know that you being you is the purpose of your life. It is the contribution you're here to make, and don't settle for being anything less.
Okay, chill factor is at a 10. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Karen. What a delight to have you on the show. And I just know that the listeners are going to just love this and resonate with this. And thank you for spreading that hope and that message, truly. That we can step into alignment with this and live a greater and more expanded version of ourselves and contribute to the whole in such a beautiful way.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I had such a great time.
Always have such a wonderful time with you, Karen. And thank you to all the listeners. Just so thankful to be here with you on Transformation Talk Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to The Spark with Stephanie James. Remember that you already have what you need to live a life that is fully lit and fully alive. You're already holding the flame. Now it's time to ignite your best life. Learn more at stephaniejames.world. That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.